The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is I Should Be Writing, Season 17, Episode 19.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting watching Doctor.
Welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty, and I am streaming live on Twitch right now, and this will go into the RSS feed soon. Hello, Catwood and Under Pope. Good to see people. Hey, Sarcasmatron 5000. Welcome. So, it's been a bad brain day. Been a little tough to get focused. And there's nothing wrong. It's not like anything bad has happened or I'm worried about anything. It's just, I think I'm when you change your work habits, it takes a little while to get used to it. And I've been both productive and exercising for a couple of days. And today my body and brain are just like, no, I don't think so. So, I did not a lot of stuff this morning, and of course, about an hour before I streamed, it was time to get down and start writing. So, that's when I got writing done, which is why I'm running late, because I wanted to finish the scene, which I didn't do. But I liked the direction I was taking the scene, and it gave me the idea for this show, so win-win. Hey, Billy Boy. But yeah, work proceeds on the book. It's going steady. I'm pretty happy with it. A little scared about shifting some parts of the book around. That's always scary because if you bring up something for the first time in chapter 4 and then you realize chapter 4 needs to be chapter 10, you need to remember A, you have to bring it up somewhere else for the first time, and B, you have to take out the, here's the first mention of this thing in chapter 10. And those are little continuity things that I'm always worried about missing. But I think for the overall structure of the book, it's going to help, so long as myself and editors catch those little inconsistencies. What I wanted to talk about today was the delicious, delicious conflict parfait. And that is because, for one, I will admit it. I am a professional author, and I still have the desire to be nice to my people. I want to create nice people, and I want to be nice to them because I'm nice. That does not make good fiction. I don't think we should be as sadistic as some storytellers. You know, there are a lot of men in storytelling who believe that if a couple is happy, then there's nothing interesting that can happen to them. This, and I know, this is why J. Michael Straczynski did a run of Spider-Man books a while back. 15 years? Something like that? And they were pretty good. They were different. Made some people angry, because of course anytime you change anything about Spider-Man, it makes people angry. But at the end, when he's happy with Mary Jane, the bigwigs decided, you know, this is not, he can't be happy, because then there's no conflict. And then, so he had to, I think, erase memories or change the past or some sort of retcon. And you know, Joss Whedon does the same thing. It's like any time a couple gets together and they're happy, you know one of them's going to die, and it's usually going to be the usually the love interest. Sometimes he'd kill off a regular character, but more often the love interest. So it's and you know, there have been stories such as, I'm thinking mostly of TV shows, you know, Friends, Mad About You, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, who make happy couples and still manage to tell stories with plenty of conflict. And the conflict doesn't have to be like infidelity or something. It's like you can create conflict more than will they or won't they get together and someone cheated on somebody else. It's possible. But I think it's like, you know, throwing a sexual assault in somebody's history to either explain why they're damaged or why they're evil. It's just like, it's easy. And a lot of people go that way. I don't recommend it, by the way. So what you need to do is think about different kinds of conflict. Actually, this is one of the problems of doing a show about storytelling is I don't want to spoil things, but a lot of times there needs to be spoilers to talk about detailed plot things. So I apologize. I started reading this Thrillers of Lucy Foley, I believe. She wrote The Hunting Party and The Guest List. And unfortunately, what I've learned about a lot of thrillers is they really like to kill women. And they really like, and a great deal of the authors are women. And they really like to put sexual assault in there. And they really like to put, you know, even better if she's pregnant and died. And these are just like, they're becoming cliche and boring. And I was very happy to find that when women were angry with a man in Lucy Foley's books, it did not have to do with that. It did have to do with, you know, a relationship that went wrong, a sexual relationship that went wrong, but the, like, the very blatant, obvious thing was not there. One person, a woman, was on a pretty serious track to go into politics, but her boyfriend took nudes of her and put them on the internet and ruined her career. And that's terrible. That's good conflict. That's interesting. Another conflict was just a woman got just strung along and kind of used and dumped by an older man and then was invited to his wedding. So she didn't like that very much. But it's still, it still doesn't go to the easy, blatantly evil thing that, frankly, is hard for a lot of people to read for personal reasons. I did not mean this to start out like a talk on don't just leap to sexual assault as conflict. It just kind of went that way. So I apologize since I didn't put any content warnings up, but I'm moving away from that now. The point is that you can find conflict in a lot of places. And I think when we're organically telling stories, it's easy. But sometimes when you think, I have to put conflict here, your brain, and by your brain, I mean my brain, let's just be 100% honest, freezes. So I wanted to talk about the conflict parfait, because I've talked about conflict on two levels before, but I just realized it's got to go deeper. I really love Lucy Foley. I love her structure. That's something that I'd like to talk about at some point. She does a very different mystery structure than anybody else does. And pulls it off. It's not just a novelty. It's not a novelty like Memento. It's actually, it works. It's easiest to use, this is a podcast about writing books, but it's easiest to use television and movies because more people have seen those. So, start out with like a disaster movie. The disaster is obviously the conflict, but the writers always put in some sort of personal conflict of the hero. You know, the guy in Die Hard had been estranged from his wife. Yeah, it's like a B-plot, because otherwise your hero comes to work all happy and ready to go, and when the disaster strikes, they are on. And that's, you know, you want your heroes to be up to the task, but it's much more interesting if they're upset about a fight they've had with a loved one. They're upset because their parents just threw them out or disinherited them. They're upset that their kid's into drugs. Something is in the back of their mind, always kind of there, going, okay, once you save the world, you're still going to have to deal with that problem with your wife. And again, people go to the easy thing and have like an ex-wife and a young son, usually, that they're estranged from, but still love, and they'll get together at the end of the disaster. Completely going off topic, because I just said I was going to talk about movies and TV, but I just realized a book that does this well is going a level deeper, which is The Dresden Files. Because no matter what personal conflicts Dresden has with the various people, various regular characters in the series, and despite whatever the big conflict is in the A-plot, he's also got the problem that because he's so good with magic, technology doesn't work around him. So he's got this crappy car. He can't have a modern car with all the computers. So he drives an old... Was he drive a Beetle? I can't remember. Granted, I lost interest in those books, but the setup was very clever. You know, on the base level, he's broke. He has an old car that breaks down all the time, and he can't get a new one, even if he got flush with cash. And he's got a skull in his basement that sasses at him. But these are things that can lead to bigger things. I really am a podcaster that's been doing this for a long time, and I can usually say sentences better than that. If you just have somebody going against the big bad, we don't have an idea who they are. Once you throw in the B-plot, you know that a common one for old mysteries was the alcoholic. A common one for Midsummer Murders, at least the first Barnaby, is he was so married to the job that he walked out, literally sometimes, walked out on his wife and daughter when news of a homicide came up. He walked out of his daughter's play once. That was a bad, bad look. And that causes conflict. And there's another way to have a happy marriage with conflict without infidelity or something obvious like that. I was thinking of this because today I had a scene with a spacewalk, and I've got somebody who is more impulsive and doesn't plan a lot, and she decided since she couldn't reach something, she would disconnect her oxygen line. The oxygen line was tethered to an alien ship. And first it was just going to be a spacewalk with not much happening except for the goal she was trying to complete in that scene. But then I thought, if she makes a stupid decision and runs out of oxygen, the people on the ship are going to be pissed at her and worried. And that's going to show, you know, part of the relationship. And, you know, when you move from worried to angry with somebody, that usually means that's indicative of a deeper feeling. You know, if you move from worried to, God, you're stupid, that is a less deep feeling. That's a friendship acquaintance feeling. But, you know, the parent is the one who's worried sick and then grounds their kid in a rage. And I realized that was a way... Besides the fact that shows her impulsiveness, sure. But it also shows, it's going to show the relationship with the person on the ship and how he reacts to her decision. And this was all just me putting in conflict about her running out of air. And I do have an email sent to a friend of mine to tell me how long she can last in a spacesuit without air. Hopefully I'll hear from her soon so I can fine-tune that scene. But it just made me realize that I have a bad habit of writing scenes where the big bad is the only focus. And sometimes I'll throw in some character-to-character conflict, but it's when you get into the, also my car's a piece of crap. Also, my mother calls me in the middle of the night. And that feels like those things can just be little dots of conflict, but they ripple out into affecting other things. Your mother calls you frequently in the middle of the night, you're not going to be very awake the next day. Your car breaks down, you may not be on time for something. It's this, these little, I mean, you've had the day where you woke up late and then your car broke down and things went wrong over and over again after that. And so you need to remember to do that to your characters. Give them a hangnail they can't stop thinking about. And then they have to cut some lemons. Oh, God. Take that metaphor, take that literally or metaphorically, or for want of a nail, you could say. Because you fight with your wife, you're going to do worse at work. Because you've got a hangnail, you didn't cut up the things for your lunch very well, so your lunch wasn't satisfying, and you were hungry in the afternoon. I mean, these things, they all ripple out, and they affect the story and affect the life of the person. Which is why when people get injured in stories and then move on as if that was just, that was last seen. The injury was the problem last seen. The injury isn't a problem anymore. And I know I'm not a warrior, and I know I'm kind of a wimp, but I gotta tell you, if I have a broken toe or a cut on my right thumb, the dominant thumb, I'm going to be thinking about it a lot simply because anything I touch with my thumb is going to make my thumb hurt. When people just like get stabbed and then the next scene they're just like having a conversation. Now, I don't want people to like obsess about it, but you know, you've got to acknowledge injuries and illnesses more than a lot of people do. This is why they want, you know, all these books and advice things tell you, you know, come up with your extensive backstory and what your characters like and what they don't like and what their phobias are and who their ex-boyfriends and girlfriends and folks are and all the people, how they feel about their parents and, you know, all of this, because it could come up later in a larger or smaller way. And then if people find out, like on a reread, that you mentioned that early on, they're going to think you're brilliant. And you don't have to put all of that into your story, but if you know it, then you think, oh, this is where I can put that phobia. But when you work on your character backstory, what you're doing is you're kind of seeding the conflict soil. I've used too many conflict metaphors here. I should go back to the parfait, but you're adding levels to the parfait. That's what I mean. When you're thinking about conflict, think about the very little things and then how they affect the larger things and then how they affect the larger things. The aching tooth, the upset stomach, the bad night's sleep. Any new parent will tell you that a bad night's sleep can also color your entire day. So I think that's all I have to say on that subject. I'm going to open it up to chat talking now. If you're listening on the RSS feed and you want to hear the continuance of the conversation, please check out patreon.com/mightymur, and then you'll get the full episodes as they streamed on Twitch. And also, I forgot to mention, I am raising money for the Trevor Project, which helps LGBT youth, and whether their problems are suicide or being kicked out of their house or homelessness, anything like that. And this is a charity I feel very strongly about, so I wanted to help raise some money for them, so I'm doing that. That link is in the chat, and I will put it in the show notes. This podcast streams twice on Twitch and YouTube, although we don't get a lot of YouTube viewers, but Twitch and YouTube on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Right now it's 3 o'clock on Tuesdays and 11:30 on Thursdays, but that might shift a little bit. I just haven't decided yet. Monday, I do an Ask Me Anything where we just sit and hang out And Wednesdays I do gaming. Currently I'm doing a unarmed cat in Skyrim, or I'm playing Stardew Valley with my kid. If you think of anything you want to ask me and you're not able to come to the live stream, please email mightymer@gmail.com. And you can see the blog and show notes to this episode at merverse.com. If you would like to get this early and you can't make the live stream, you can support on Patreon, patreon.com/mightymer, and get it at least several hours earlier. That's the worst it's gotten, is several hours earlier, but usually it's a day or two. As I said, I am supporting the Trevor Project, so if you would like to support my fundraising goals, that is in the chat and will be in the show notes. And on Twitter I am Mighty Mer, on Twitch I'm Mighty Mer, on YouTube I'm Mer Lafferty, and Instagram, which I have started neglecting again and I should get back to that, is Mighty Mer Tube. Thank you for listening, thank you for coming by the live stream, thank you for chatting, thank you for lurking. I'm just very grateful that I have people here that want to hear me talk about writing, even after all these years. So I hope I see you guys in the future, and until then, you should be writing. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymer. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Anilio. You can find more about him at johnanilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. But I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.